A Family That Flies Together Sticks Together, Chapter 3. Sebastian Lelievre, European Quidditch League veteran and Quidditch World Cup winner, retires quietly in November and promptly vanishes. At least, that's the official story. Motherfucker, Andy says, which is the only name she uses for Merrick, tried to fire him. Nikki, Joe, and Niall all curse, and Slater, the guard's head of legal, snorts from behind his desk. They're all camped out in his office, supposedly to discuss Niall's faux pas with the Muggle hospital. Slater had just smiled at her and said without preamble, "You did the right thing, and we've got you covered, Niall." Nikki had squeezed Niall's hand as she'd breathed out, because even if he's never had the crippling anxiety of, "They'll take my wand," he always knows how to comfort her. They'd move swiftly on to discussing Booker's fate, which was already permeating the gossip mill. "Merrick tried to fire him," Slater says, and shares a sharp grin with Andy. "We didn't let him. Instead, Booker is retiring with a very sizable severance package." Niall crosses her arms. "Settlement money, so we don't go after Kozak," she says. And Andy sighs. "Kozak's got more lawyers covering her than flies on a piece of shit," she says. "And you know how that'll go, Niall. At the end of the day, Booker's the one who hid his issues. He's the one who abused the draft. They'll run that argument into the ground." Niall presses her lips together. She knows. She hates it, but she knows. Even getting an early retirement deal for Booker is a rare win, thanks to Slater personally working overtime on Booker's case. As a franchise, the guard has a particular reputation. You can take the player out of the guard, but you can't take the guard out of the player. Niall had not truly appreciated the extent of this sentiment until now, extending beyond the team to the crew in front office. Considering Booker had been their keeper for a solid 4 seasons and integral to Andy's rebuild of the team, the collective grief at his career's demise is palpable. Everybody has a Booker story to share, especially those who'd also known Booker prior to the guard. Niall wonders if Booker himself realizes the influence he's had across nearly 2 decades in the league. The Alchemist releases a statement citing health reasons and asking for privacy. Fortunately, and unfortunately, it's not an unexpected end for Booker, even if the timing's strange and lacks the traditional retirement ceremonies for a player with his record. Articles that read like obituaries start getting published. No guard member asks Niall for details on what had happened, but the assumptions cut close. Her chaser squad bands around her, distracting and comforting in equal turns, and their new PR intern, Caitlin, is scarily adept at redirecting reporters when they push her about Booker. Somebody had cited them all at the hospital. Niall forgets sometimes how famous Joe, Nikki, and Andy are in the wizarding world. It's a particularly horrible way to be reminded. What the press do not find out about, thank God, is Booker checking into a private clinic in Paris. Niall barely knows about it, which hurts even though she knows it's not her business to bear. Andy has been with him mainly. He's reticent to see even Joe and Nikki, and even more so with her. He had apologized to her so much his voice had gone hoarse, even though she assuages him every time. There's more to it, in the way he can't quite look at her, in the words he doesn't say. Nikki says something vague about Booker and his family, which Niall doesn't touch. She'll wait. When Andy tells them of Booker's plan in December, Joe and Nikki both exhale, leaning close together. "We'll just have to visit him," Niall says, already thinking about their game schedule, "and be in better contact." "We will," Andy says, "but..." She sighs. "We've been here before. He tried different things when he was with us, but to try and do them while playing full-time is..." She shakes her head. "This time has to be different." She stands and looks out the window as if she can see across the channel to where Booker is. "He needs time. He needs space. He needs help." We've given him that. She looks back at Niall, her face set. It's up to him now. We'll be here when he figures it out. Babe, have you seen? Joe says, and his wallet floats over to him without Nikki even looking up from the couch. Joe grins and pockets it, trying to decide between jackets. March is finally warming up, but it's been temperamental lately. Take the leather one, Nikki says, and Joe hums and thanks as he pulls it on. Nikki does look at him then, and the expression on his face makes Joe smirk, sauntering over to where Nikki's sitting. What are you up to? He asks, and Nikki shows him the papers he's looking at. Alterations on Beetroot Bats, he says. They want me to test them before the playoffs. You nerd, Joe says fondly, seeing the mass of comments Nikki scrawled over the diagrams. He takes the pages and promptly drops them on the coffee table so he can kiss Nikki against the couch cushions. He means for it to be sweet, as he really does have to go. But Nikki grins and pulls Joe flush against him, fingers finding skin, and Joe groans. I'm going to be late, he says between kisses, and Nikki pulls back, laughing. Since when have you cared about that? He asks. Joe sighs, sitting back to straighten his shirt. Since Caitlin's been on my case, he says. Joe, Nikki says, hands still around Joe's hips. She's like half your size, and an intern. She's a menace, Joe says, and jumps as his Cascom buzzes. See, that'll be her right now. I can't believe a PR intern is disrupting my plans, Nikki says. What plans? Joe says, distractedly checking his messages. Oh, you know, Nikki says, and his voice makes Joe look back at him. I was thinking about blowing you right here on the... Nope, Joe says, scooting backwards and almost tripping over the coffee table. Nope, I need to go and have a very important meeting. I can't be thinking about that. Aren't you just discussing how naked you're getting for the photo shoot? Nikki says, smirking, and Joe throws a pillow at him. No, Nikki, he says. It's to discuss the brand's vision, and it's for art. You're modeling underwear, Joe, Nikki says, rolling his eyes. And am I not art in underwear? Joe asks and makes for the door. Hold that thought. I'll be back in a couple hours. All right, Nikki says, sounding smug. I'll be here thinking about you. Even now, it's thrilling to leave Nikki in his house and know he'll still be there when Joe returns. He's used to home being a full house, and his place feels like that when Nikki's there. Even before they got together, Nikki's belongings had found their way next to his. A spare pair of running shoes, snacks hidden in his pantry, a hoodie that Joe ended up claiming. By now, Joe wouldn't be surprised if most of Nikki's stuff was at his. Maybe it's selfish, but he loves that Nikki prefers his house, even if he bitches about tripping over Joe's shoes and despairs at Joe's inability to throw anything out. Just because your place is barren, Joe says, clutching an ugly teddy Zara had made for him, complete with its own guard uniform. I move around a lot, Nikki says, trying to corner him. And I don't have a hoarding problem. Joe gasps, covering the teddy's ears. How dare you, he says, and Nikki rolls his eyes. I keep things of great sentiment, Nikki. Zara's making one for you as we speak. You're going to tell her you threw it out. Nikki glares at him, because of course not, and Joe smiles triumphantly. Two ugly teddies now sit together on his mantle. It's not smooth sailing. Their lives rarely are doing what they do. Sometimes they have bad games or dumb accidents that send them both fuming off the pitch. Sometimes at themselves, their team, the opposing team. Sometimes at each other. Sometimes Joe slams away from Nikki, and sometimes Nikki withdraws into a solitary place that only gets more distant the more Joe pushes. But most of the time, they turn towards each other. Most of the time, they ground each other, even if it's just a shared glance across the locker room, not needing to touch to know the other is there, steady and sure. In the aftermath of Booker, they both cycle through their own versions of rage and grief. Joe's igniting in flares and burning out just as fast. Nikki's quieter, but more sustained. They rally around Andy, who's more affected than she'll ever admit, and step up as support for Niall and the rookies. They balance well, Joe looking after the offense and Nikki the defense. The team flourishes around them, and the championship talk grows louder with every game. There's no pausing a season, and Joe thinks he'd go mad without the quiet respite of Nikki, reading next to him after dinner, working out the knots in Joe's back before bed, waking him up with coffee. They make playoffs. They make it past round two this time, and then three, and then they're in the league finals. It's a bruising series against the Firebirds, which is, ironically, the first team Nikki had played for in the EQL, and the team he'd won his first championship with. The personal connection makes it both more interesting and more intense, and the guard follow Nikki's lead all the way to Game 7. They're all running on fumes and willful determination at this point, and yet the night before the final game, Joe can't sleep. Nikki usually alternates between sleeping at his own place before big games or in Joe's guest bedroom, but during the final series, he's been falling into Joe's bed, asleep before Joe curls around him. Tonight, however, he turns over and runs his fingers down Joe's face, brushing over his playoff beard. "Sorry," Joe says. "Do you want me to go sleep in?" "No," Nikki says, and kisses him softly, like they're sharing a secret in the dark. "I can't sleep either." "I can't believe it'll be over tomorrow," Joe says, and Nikki hums, hands still moving. His fingers trace a well-worn map of Joe's old injuries, even though most of them had technically healed. Joe's hands do the same over Nikki, always coming back to cup the back of his head, fingers gentle against his scalp. "It's been," Nikki says and sighs. "Quite the fucking season," Joe says. And Nikki laughs against him, tangling their legs together. "Yes," he says, "quite. But also one of the best seasons of my life, despite it all." Joe knows Nikki doesn't mean the wins or his own numbers, even though both support his point. "Me too," he says, and pulls Nikki against him until they're touching at every point. They're far too exhausted for anything more, but he just wants to be as close to Nikki as he can, grounding them both. "I really," Nikki says into Joe's hair, "really want to win tomorrow." "I thought you said it didn't matter," Joe teases, even though the mere idea of holding the championship trophy makes his blood sing, no matter how tired he is. "As long as we did it together." Nikki runs his hands down Joe's back. "Of course," he says, "but it's always better with a win." "Can't argue with that," Joe says. "I really fucking want to win, too." They lie quietly for a moment, just holding each other. Joe's sore in more places than Celeste can keep up with, but every ache seems to quieten when they're laying like this. Joe's about to drift off when Nikki pulls back slightly. Joe can just make out his eyes in the darkness. "Yusuf," Nikki says, "I love you." Joe stares at him, entire body waking up in one fell swoop before rolling over to switch on the bedside lamp. Nikki groans against the light, and Joe looks down at this remarkable, ridiculous, unfathomable man squinting against the light with half his hair sticking up and says, "Niccolo, I love you too. So much. Fuck." And kisses him, trying to press his words into Nikki's lips before kissing over his nose, his forehead, his cheekbones. Nikki laughs and bats at him, dorky in that way he only ever is around Joe. "I've loved you for so long," Joe says, and Nikki's fingers tighten in his shirt. "I have too," he says. "I just took longer to know how to name it. And when I realized, I knew you knew." His hands find Joe's heart. "I just wanted to say it, so you would hear it. no matter what. Thank you, Joe says, and kisses Nikki one last time before switching off the light. And on that bombshell, we really must sleep. And people think I'm the dramatic one. Sheesh. I wasn't being dramatic, Nikki says, rolling over so Joe's curved around him, as the tradition goes. Only honest. Joe grins into the back of Nikki's neck. All right, Ya Amar, he says. I love you too. Just being honest. They're both asleep within minutes. They win. Nikki's flying by Joe when Joe takes off, silent and flat against his broom handle, and Nikki takes after him without a second thought. He hears the crowd gasp as they realize what's happening, and Nikki's ready to block the hand of God if he has to, just to let Joe reach the snitch safely. The other seeker is streaking towards them, but it's too late. Joe's arm swings out, and then he's swerving upwards, snitch struggling in his fist. The stadium erupts as the projection zooms in on Joe, clutching the snitch like he can't quite believe it, despite the smile on his face. The rest of the guard are flying towards them, either from the air or vaulting onto their brooms off the bench, and confetti is raining down on them in the guard's black and silver. Nikki brings his broom up next to Joe's and smiles helplessly across at him. He knows this moment cements Joe's legacy, the seeker that broke the guard's 30-year championship drought. Joe turns to Nikki, eyes wild and shining. Usually they would hug now before the team envelops them. Instead, Joe grins and yanks Nikki in by the chest guard, kissing him soundly in front of 18,000 people. Nikki tilts on his broom and kisses him back, the snitch caught in between them. The crowd noise crescendos to an almighty degree, matching the roar in Nikki's ears, and he feels Joe smile against his lips. He's not sure if his heart can take it all. A second later, Niall thumps them both on the back. She's loop-de-looping around them with Olivia and June, still perfectly coordinated. Everyone is yelling in triumph, unable to sit still as the crowd celebrates beneath them. All right, lovebirds, Niall shouts. Victory laps! They fall into formation as the team flies around the stadium saluting. Joe, of course, does the dangerous thing and flies right over the heads of the crowd, high-fiving spectators with the hand not holding the snitch. Nikki can still feel their kiss on his lips, mouth tingling with it as he smiles. Even as the team starts descending back to earth, Nikki still feels like he's floating. A game official is trying to convince Joe to let go of the snitch so they can lock it in its display case. Joe's looking at him like he's mad, and Nikki knows exactly how he feels despite never having been a seeker. Tesoro, he says, walking up beside him, and Joe turns, eyes wide. There's so much noise all around them it's hard to think at all. You can let go now. They'll give it back to you at the trophy ceremony. Joe says, wondering, and Nikki grips his arm until Joe's eyes refocus. Oh, Joe says, and looks at his own fist, still clenched so tightly it's shaking. Oh, of course. Sorry, he says to the game official, who's grinning at them both. That's very common, don't worry, he says. Take your time now. Your fingers might have cramped. Joe slowly uncurls his fist over the box, and the moment the snitch drops down, the game official snaps the glass lid shut. Thank you, Mr. Alcazani. Mr. Genovese, he says, nodding at them both. That game was an honor to watch. Nikki takes Joe's hand as they stand, waiting, taking it all in. He carefully massages Joe's palm over the glove before slowly extending each finger and stretching out the hand. Joe watches him, and for once, not even the great wordsmith Yusuf Alcazani has the words to express how happy they both are to be together in this perfect, perfect moment. Championship celebrations are beyond wild. Joe knows it's a nightmare for multiple branches of management, both within the league and the MLEP. Fans are apparating en masse to any bar that cites guards players, and the crowds spill between magical and muggle venues, too boisterous to be contained by either. He and Nikki make out in every dark corner they can find. The cat's well and truly out of the bag, so Joe intends to enjoy it. Nikki is drunk in a way he rarely allows himself to get in public, and he keeps stopping to say, "Porca puttana, ti amo così tanto," and "Se la cosa più fantastica che mi sia capitate." Between kisses. Joe can barely hear him over the pounding music, which is probably for the best, considering how he usually gets when Nikki speaks Italian to him while making out. In their sixth bar of the night, Joe finds Caitlin perched in a corner booth, eyes flitting between players. He still believes she would have made a great seeker in another life. Instead, she's stuck babysitting a bunch of overgrown athletes, losing their minds on a potent mix of triumph, alcohol, and fatigue. "You okay?" Joe asks, sliding into the seat next to her. She's nursing a drink that smells very non-alcoholic and extremely caffeinated. She nods, but he knows her well enough to raise an eyebrow. "People been giving you trouble?" he asks, and she sighs. "It's a bar," she says, and then rolls her shoulders back. "Nothing I can't handle, don't worry. You should be enjoying your night." She gives him a rueful smile. "Don't mind me, I just don't have a high clubbing tolerance." "You should be having fun too," Joe says. "You're just as much a part of this win, Katie." Caitlin laughs. "Says the guy who caught the snitch," she says. "I'm surprised you're sober enough to talk right now with the number of drinks people are buying you." "Eh, I just pawned them off to Nikki," Joe says, and then pauses. "I should probably stop doing that." "He looks like he's having fun," Caitlin says, pointing. Nikki's currently dancing with Niall, loose and languid but very much in sync. More than a few people are staring, and Joe grins. "He's so talented," he says, and Caitlin rolls her eyes and pours Joe a glass of water. "Thank you," Joe says, "for looking after the team this season, me especially, me and Nikki. I know that took more work than you let on." "Yes, which you ruined by going public at the most watched moment of the final," Caitlin says, but she's smiling. "I know you didn't think it through," Joe laughs because she really does know him too well. "But it might just work out, actually. Everyone's more focused on the win." "As they should be," Joe says, nodding in satisfaction. "But," Caitlin says, and gives him a look that no 22-year-old should be capable of, "things will change now. Just don't get papped having sex over the summer, okay? Front office needs a holiday, too." Joe has a vivid split-second vision of Nikki on top of him, head thrown back, before Caitlin jabs him in the side. "Ow, okay, message received, no sex tapes," he says. And she nods, prim, before her lips twitch and she snorts, which sets Joe off, and then they're laughing until the team finds them and drags them both onto the dance floor. When Joe arrives home in Tunis, he gets a 2-second hug from Zara before she's pushing him aside to stare at the front door. "Well?" she says after a moment, hands on her hips. "Where's Nikki?" "What?" Joe says. "He's in Italy?" "You didn't bring him home?" Zara says, as if Joe's personally failed her. Joe starts and looks around at Aisha and Amira for help. They're both glaring at him too. "I didn't know I was meant to," he says weakly. And they all let out identical noises of exasperation. "He's got his own stuff to sort out. You know how hectic championship summers are. We thought it'd be easier." He stops, putting his hands on his own hips. "Hang on. All of you were hating on him last summer. You can't act all offended now." Yes, we can," Zara says. "Last summer was before you two had been married for a season and then made out in front of the entire stadium, dumbass." "We aren't," Joe says. "We didn't..." "Okay, so we did kiss, but I just won the game, for fuck's sake." "Language," Mariam says, coming in through the back door with impeccable timing. Joe glares at Zara before going to his mother. "I'm getting bullied again," he says to her. "They all hated Nikki, and now they're expecting me to have brought him home." Wait, Mediam says, looking around him. You didn't? Joe throws up his hands as his sisters all make vindicated noises. I cannot win, Joe says. You were all calling him the Italian nightmare last summer, remember? That's before you kissed him on camera, Mariam says, and Joe groans. I thought you two were keeping it quiet. We did for an entire season, Joe says. But as I was saying, we just won. Oh, hey, Yusuf, Ibrahim says, appearing at the back door and taking off his shoes. Welcome home. Is that beater of yours with you? When they reunite at the end of July, Joe looks at Nikki making panna cotta in Joe's t-shirt and shorts, humming along with the muggle speaker Niall had given them and says, Move in with me. Nikki stops, a slow smile spreading across his face as Joe walks towards him. Ask nicely, he says, putting down the whisk. Niccolo, Joe says, putting his arms around Nikki's neck. Nikki's hands find his hips, and they automatically sway a little in time with the music. Light of my life, love of my heart, even when you make me run at 6 in the morning, will you move in with me? I was hoping you would ask, Nikki says, eyes closing as he leans his forehead against Joe's. Though I think I've infiltrated this place pretty thoroughly already. Ah, your evil plans are finally coming to fruition then, Joe says, and kisses him. Nikki makes a noise against his lips and pulls him in. Dessert gets well and truly forgotten. The kitchen gets messy regardless. Nikki moving in mirrors them getting together. It still thrills Joe to make it official, but they also slide easily into it, as it's not that different from what they've been doing for a year already. They still mark the occasion by fucking in every room and on every available surface, but Joe's pretty sure that's mandatory. Joe can't stop smiling when Nikki updates his address with front office and starts planning a preseason housewarming for the team, despite it being the same house. Their domestic bliss comes to a screeching halt in August when Andy calls them into front office. What's happened? Joe says as Caitlin joins them. I kept my word there were no sex tapes over summer. Nikki chokes on his water and Caitlin thumps him on the back, shaking her head. And as grateful as we are for that, she says, this is actually about Nikki. You're just here by proxy. You're so sweet, Joe says before Andy clears her throat, looking amused. It's a dangerous look on her. Firstly, welcome back, she says. I'm happy to report minimal damages over summer, except Olivia nearly losing the championship trophy in the Australian Outback, which Caitlin tells me we're pretending never happened. Of course, Joe says, mentally making a note to hear that story as soon as possible. Now, Nikki, Andy says, and Nikki sits up. It's your third season with us now, and I think it's about time you pulled your weight. Nikki barely raises an eyebrow, and they all laugh. Andy waves her hand. Your performance aside, you gave the rookies a lot of extra support last season, and it really showed. I helped too, Joe interjects, and Caitlin snorts. You lead a lot of pranks, you mean, she says, and Joe grins. I oversaw team bonding, he says, made sure they didn't overstep. That's important, Katie. You were both great, Andy says grudgingly. As you know, we're bringing up a new beater from the youth league this season. Huang, right? Nikki says. I've watched his tapes. Very promising. Yes, him, Andy says, nodding. We know you'll be a great mentor for him, Nikki. But we were also thinking he should billet with you. Nikki looks immediately at Joe, surprise reflecting back at each other. Of course, billeting was a rite of passage, and they're both experienced enough to take a rookie, but they hadn't thought. That okay? Andy asks, looking between them. It's not really a question. It's part of how the team works, after all. Joe doesn't think but we love having sex in any room at any given moment, is going to change things. Andy's smirking like she knows exactly what he's thinking. Of course, Andy, Nikki says, and Joe makes a face at him. We're too young for rookies, he mutters. You're not, Caitlin says, and honestly, he should never have recommended her return. I'm still young, he says, and he could tell Nikki's trying not to laugh. I'm barely 30. You're turning 31 this season, Caitlin says. Joe gasps and glares at her. Anyway, Andy says to Nikki, that's great. Caitlin's returning in a split role between PR and management this season, so she'll be able to brief you before he arrives and help with anything from there. Joe grumbles about it good-naturedly as they clear out a guest bedroom. Nikki laughs at his whining but is otherwise quiet. What is it, Albie? Joe asks the night before their rookie arrives. Nikki keeps rearranging the couch cushions like the boy is actually going to care about them. Nikki doesn't bother denying something's on his mind, just takes a moment to form his thoughts. Joe steps up behind him and wraps his arms around Nikki's waist. Nikki hums in appreciation and leans against him. I want him to be happy here, Nikki says. My rookie year, with Booker and his family. Joe's arms tighten, and Nikki turns his head to press a kiss against Joe's temple. No matter what else is happening in their lives, Booker is never far from their minds. I didn't realize it then, but they were so important to that year. And after, too. They taught me so much that I've only realized later, even now. Like what? Joe asked gently. Nikki doesn't speak much of his time with Booker's family, in the before of Booker's life. Booker's family had remained relatively anonymous on account of being Muggle. The wizarding public just knew that Booker had sacrificed a year at the height of his career to care for his wife. She'd passed before the year was over. Nikki had told Joe in the darkness of their bedroom that Booker had lost all three sons that year, too, his in-laws taking custody as he'd spiraled into grief. I didn't know how to speak to him, Nikki had whispered. We won the championship the year he took off, my fourth year. They traded him to the guard when he returned. Joe had joined the guard a season after Booker. He'd never heard the details or pushed for them, just tried to help Booker drink less and move forward. And Booker had seemed so good at it, too. It twists at Joe to wonder if all the happy memories he'd shared with Booker sat under a facade. Here, in their living room, Nikki leans his head against Joe's and says, The Lelievres were the first happy family I ever knew. And his voice is so matter-of-fact, Joe knows Nikki doesn't mean for it to hurt. It still does. Booker and Corinne, I'd never seen two people so in love. And not like in the movies. Actually, in love. And so loving with their children, even though they were all terrors. His fingers find Joe's tangling together. They were so tired all the time, he says, voice soft. But they never took it out on each other, or the kids. They were always so kind to me, even though I was a difficult teenager. You difficult, Joe says, voice light. Never. Nikki laughs, squeezing Joe's hands. I know it's not so serious, he says, but I just want our rookie to have a home here. Starting in the league isn't easy for anyone. Hey, he's your rookie, Joe says. I just happen to also live here. Sure, Nikki says, amused. We'll see how long that attitude lasts for. Chris Wong arrives by tripping over a bag handle in his haste to shake hands and promptly spilling his entire protein shake over Nikki's favorite blue shirt. It's actually Joe's shirt, which he knows makes this 100 times worse to Nikki. But as Nikki wipes green shake off his chin, Joe sees him aim for humor. What Nikki says is, I hope you're more graceful in the air. Chris looks like he's rapidly descending through hell. Caitlin saves them all by whipping out her wand to clean Nikki off, studiously avoiding eye contact with Joe. Anyway, she says, lips twitching, welcome to the team, Chris. Nice to meet you, Nikki says, trying to return to civility. Thank you, sir, Chris says miserably, and Joe has to bite the inside of his cheek to keep a straight face. Call me Nikki, Nikki says with his awkward meet-and-greet smile. I've been reviewing your tapes, Chris. Great youth run. Chris's eyes widen like he's flashing back to every bad play he's ever made. Nikki continues because he's been talking Joe's ear off about Chris's performance and is evidently not done. Your SOB numbers are good, but we need to raise your HPT. That's typical, don't worry. Also, you've been avoiding your left side in your last few games. Is that an injury we should be aware of, or a lack of ambidexterity? Chris's mouth goes slack. Joe forgets people aren't used to the way Nikki talks, poor bastard. Okay, he says, putting an arm around Nikki and smiling at Chris. I'm starving. Why don't we go home and get you settled in first, and then talk Quidditch over dinner? I was going to suggest that, Nikki says defensively, and Joe laughs and squeezes his shoulders. All right, let me get some of these. He picks up one of Chris's bags before he can protest, and several heavy somethings tumble over inside. Jesus, kid, Joe says, hefting it. What have you got in here? Textbooks, Chris says, looking pained. Chris is coming from the uni track, Caitlin says, but we called him up early so he'll be finishing his studies part-time while he starts with us. She gives Joe and Nikki a very significant look. Chris is coming from Cambridge, gentlemen. Joe whistles. Chris goes red. Nikki looks vague and says, Oh, that's one of the Muggle Magic adjacent institutes, isn't it? Chris's eyes dart to Joe as he tries to figure out if Nikki's being serious or pulling his leg. Joe tries to silently convey the fact that Nikki is such a born and bred Quidditch playing machine that he isn't familiar with Cambridge being one of the most prestigious tertiary institutions for wizards and muggles alike. Caitlin looks incredulous. Yes, Nikki, she says, and Joe raises his eyebrows at her. She's impressed. Nothing impresses Caitlin. Is that wise? Nikki asks, frowning. Joe knows he's saying it out of concern, but Chris now looks like he's reconsidering every life choice he's ever made. Andy's approved it, Caitlin says, because she always knows what they need to hear, and Nikki nods, mollified. Chris does not look assured. He is very quiet when they show him around the house, and he stares at Nikki with the face of someone who's seeing their idol walk out of a poster frame. His expression with Joe is much the same, and he keeps looking between them like he's caught in a fever dream. Things somehow get worse over dinner. Nikki's made pasta al pesto from scratch because it's the homeliest meal he knows, and always a team favorite. He pauses as he's heaping Chris's plate, because Chris is looking increasingly queasy, but also determinedly silent. What is it, Chris? Joe asks, torn between amusement and sympathy. Chris looks down at the table and then says, in the air of someone making a murder confession, I'm lactose intolerant. Nikki puts the serving bowl down. He looks like he's just heard a murder confession. Joe can feel his composure cracking. Oh dear, he says, unable to decide which angle to take. Well, it's fine, Chris says, even though his expression clearly says it's not. I mean, I can get lactose pills. I just don't have them on me right now. No, it's fine, Nikki says, levitating all of their dishes back to the kitchen like they're personally offending him. We can get takeout. He nudges Joe to sort delivery options before focusing back on Chris. Let me get you a drink first. He points his wand at the wine cooler, which is one of the few treasured possessions Nikki had moved in with. What do you like, Chris? Chris takes a deep breath. I can't drink alcohol, he says, and it's the last straw. Joe bursts out laughing and then keeps going when both Chris and Nikki turn to him with utterly betrayed expressions. This season is going to be great. So rather than the usual formation of June and Olivia bracketing you as you come out of the Wyndham, Booker says, sketching a diagram with his hands, practice utilizing that free space for feinting, and talk to Andy about non-dominant throws. Otherwise, keepers will get used to your tells. Niles scribbles furiously for another moment before putting her pen down. She's going to need another notebook soon, and October's only just ending. Thanks, she says, and Booker shrugs. Just saying what I see. You've improved a lot, though, since... You've improved a lot. Well done. She looks at his face through the Cascom projection. It's been just over a year since the incident, a year that's both flown and crawled by. She'd won a championship. He'd left the clinic. She'd started a new season. He'd bought a cottage in Burgundy. She's relieved to see he started putting on weight again, looking more like his old, well, older self. There had been a terrifying couple of months where he'd been almost unrecognizable. He hadn't let them visit the clinic and barely called until he left in May, when they'd been deep into playoffs. As the new season had started, however, Niall had been coaxing him into more calls by asking him about her play, which he's always been a sucker for. You're really good at this, she says, and then hesitates. Have you thought about coaching? Not necessarily in the league, though I'm sure that's an option. Booker looks away. He starts and sighs. I'm not sure. It was such a relief to be away from it all, you know? He looks back at her like he's just said something blasphemous and expects to be struck down. I mean, you can also just enjoy retirement, she says, even though a small part of her wants to say, so you're really not coming back? She knows everyone's time comes to an end, but it's never real until it's already happened. You deserve it. Booker laughs, dry and self-deprecating. Maybe, he says, but I can't just do nothing. Nothing sounds heavenly sometimes, Niall says, stretching and wincing. She'd fumbled a quaffle catch during practice and her side still aches from the hit. I've been approached about commentating, Booker says, and she sits up. Or analyst work. Couple of broadcast roles. Dude, Niall says, grinning. That would be amazing. You'd be such a nice change from some of the idiots doing it right now. Maybe, Booker says, vague, and she drops it, making a mental note to discuss it with Andy. A maybe isn't a no. A maybe is progress. How's the team? Booker says. Because as much as he says he's away from the game, that doesn't mean the people, too. I'm getting some very existential messages from Joe about Nikki's rookie. Niall laughs. Everyone's roasting them about being Chris's dads, she says. Joe is taking the rookies out, you know, she says, and Booker nods. That had been his and Joe's sacred duty back in the day. And the team overheard Nikki telling him off because Chris had a paper due. Booker laughs, loud and booming, and Niall sees him, the Booker she'd first met as a rookie herself. Bet that's making him feel real old, Booker says, and Niall nods. Joe's trying to combat it by being cool, Dad, she says, and Booker snorts. Poor Chris, honestly. I can't imagine playing full-time, studying, and billeting with two of my heroes. One would be bad enough. Surely he's realized they're just dweebs by now, Booker says, though I assume he's being hazed to hell and back. Niall makes a face. He makes it too easy, she says, and every time people ask him about living with Joe and Nikki, he gets this haunted expression that just makes everyone more shit-stirring. Just another day with the guard, Booker says, and for a second his face twists. Niall clears her throat and asks the question she's been waiting to ask. Hey, she says, since you're gainfully unemployed at the moment, you're free towards the end of November, right? Booker narrows his eyes at her. Depends, he says. What's up? I get to go home for Thanksgiving, she says, and feels herself grin just saying it. And I'm dragging you all with me. Come and have a proper American holiday with us, Booker. Booker looks so stunned that she falls silent, waiting. Finally, he says, thought you'd want to get away from the team. I'm doing them a favor, she says, keeping her voice light. Chris needs a parent-free weekend. Even Andy needs to leave the pitch once in a while. Your friend's accent's getting ridiculous. Come take a break. He blinks at her. She sits on her hands, trying not to fidget. Well, thank you for the invite, he says slowly. She raises an eyebrow at him. Can I think about it? He says. And his voice is so uncertain, she nods. Sure, she says. Just asking you now so you can get a good deal on port keys. All right, he says, and the corners of his mouth are lifting just a little. Now go put more salve on that hit you're not telling me about, and get to bed. Wow. Okay, Mr. I won't coach, Niall says, rolling her eyes. Booker laughs. And tell me how that rookie goes, he says. Any bets on him making a fatal prank yet? Kid, Joe says, and Chris jumps so violently he almost trips over his own feet. I wouldn't do that if I were you. Chris swears, and then looks so scared that Joe takes pity on him and smiles, taking a seat at his own locker space and gesturing for Chris to sit down. It's almost comical how fast he complies. Last year's rookie's really chucking you in the deep end, huh? Joe says, and Chris sighs, looking down at the ground. Joe hopes he hadn't looked this tired at 21. What's the prank? Steal Nikki's broom and take it for a joyride? Joe asks, and then whistles as Chris nods. Good Lord! We need to have a chat with those idiots. That's beyond a death wish. Chris goes pale. Joe tries another tactic. Do you know why Nikki's broom is so special? He says, and Chris sits up. It's the only Genovese 10 that exists, he recites. It uses the same core model he's been flying on since he was 17, and is the basis of his elite line with Fazioli, which is the only brand he flies with. He stops, looking at Joe like he's expecting a grade. He also designed a kid's line with them, Joe says, smiling. He's never gotten over the sight of Nikki chasing after toddlers as they zoom around on Pandino brooms, constantly bouncing into his knees. He's such a sweetheart. Chris gives Joe a weird look and Joe clears his throat. Anyway, he says, you know it's a fully manual broom. Chris blanches. I thought it was only partially manual, he says, sounding nauseous. Joe knows how he feels. The modern automatics are built with unbreakable balancing, braking, and flight correction charms. Most of the younger players cannot even imagine flying without it. And that's just the mechanics. The folklore is another thing altogether. Nope, Joe says. One of the last full manuals in the league. Can you imagine why Nikki prefers it? Chris nods, the academic question dissipating some of his nerves. Far more flexibility and precision, he says, if you can handle the broom. Doesn't hinder you from making crazy hits. A lot riskier for it, though. Right, Joe says. And you know how good brooms respond to you? Chris nods again. There's much more of a dialogue with a manual, Joe says. And that one? He points to Nikki's broom hanging innocently against the wall. Only talks to Nikki. He laughs. I tried to ride it once last season, he says, and sees Chris's brain form the obligatory joke before self-preservation kicks in. And it bucked me off mid-air and then hit me for trying. Chris gives him a skeptical look and Joe gestures with one hand. Go ahead if you don't believe me, he says. See how long you last. Chris puts his face in his hands. Oh, God, he says, muffled. This is so much worse than the cheese thing. Thank God you caught me. Joe laughs. You'll learn what pranks to take and what to say no to. There's daring, and then there's suicidal. As if you'd know the difference, Chris says, and then slaps a hand over his own mouth. Joe grins at him. Fair enough, he says. But I know this one. Don't fuck with Nikki's gear or his routines if you want to live. Chris nods vigorously. Thank you, he says, for saving me. I mean, Joe says, smirking, it's not all altruistic. I have to get into bed with him. I don't want a rookie prank to ruin that. Chris looks slightly nauseous again. A moment later, Nicky comes out of the showers, pulling his shirt on over his head. He smiles when he sees Joe, and then frowns at the sight of Chris, who looks like an overgrown deer in headlights. "Chris, you know you can go home before us," he says. "You don't have to wait." "I was just imparting some wisdom on him," Joe says, winking at Chris. "He's my rookie, not yours," Nicky says, picking up his bag, and then carefully his broom. "Don't listen to a word he says," Nicky says to Chris, who nods until Joe raises his eyebrows at him. As they walk through the bowels of the stadium, Nicky squeezes Chris's shoulder. "I was checking your stats with Andy earlier," he says, because of course he had been. "And your hit percentage on target has gone up 20 points since August." He smiles as Chris's eyes widen. "That's a better increase than when I first started. Really well done." Chris looks like Nicky's handing him the winning lotto ticket. "Thank you," he says, and then immediately switches to nerd mode. "But am I losing out on force from focusing too much on target accuracy? Or is that good for the league's official stance on hits? But if we're following league sentiment, then surely accuracy would be defined differently." Joe zones out and watches as Nicky and Chris start debating. Nicky's a gesticulator when he's enthused, and Chris is the same when he forgets he's talking to Niccolo Genovese and just gets into it. Joe realizes that Chris has picked up more of Nicky's mannerisms when talking stats and smiles as Chris rebuts one of Nicky's points, hands waving. He never would have dared to 2 months ago. Chris turns back to him and says, "Joe, help me out. Nicky thinks my HPT ratio for player hits is too low. You know the league's cracking down on foul percentages." "Well, you know," Nicky says with that barely detectable smirk, "back in Andromache's day." "Oh, come on," Chris says, throwing his hands up. And both Joe and Nicky laugh, catching each other's eye. Maybe, Joe thinks, this rookie thing isn't so bad after all. "Holy shit, Niall Freeman?" The Chicago port key terminal is packed, but the call is loud enough that they all turn. A pack of frat bros has paused by them at the exit, squinting at her. They're all so tall, she can't miss them. She feels Joe, Nicky, and Andy quietly flank her, reflexive even off pitch. "Yes," she says. Their faces clear, and several mouths drop open. "Dude," the one in a Hawks jersey says, walking closer. "Congrats on the championship. Huge fan." "Oh," Niall says, feeling herself snap into media mode. "Oh, thank you." "Do you mind?" another one asks, Cascom in hand, and Niall smiles, running a quick hand over her hair. "Not at all," she says, and they all grin. Niall can hear Andy laughing quietly behind her. "Could you," the boy asks, turning to Joe, and then does another double take. "Oh, what the hell?" They all end up taking photos, even Andy. "Coach, when are you going to give our girl the A?" Hawks guy asks, and Andy laughs, clapping Niall on the back. "Maybe after a couple more championships," she says, and the boys all hoot. "You'll play for a States team in the Transatlantic Sweep, though, right?" one asks Niall as she signs his cap. "I'll have to get picked first," she says, and they all give her a nonplussed look. "That's a given," another says, and Niall laughs, trying not to look too pleased. The guard all give her shit as they merge into Muggle Chicago, where she ultimately has the last laugh when she makes them all take the L. It's good to be home. Niall forgets how much wizards can stick out in Muggle homes until Nicky takes the TV remote Ty hands him and the flat screen showers them with gold sparks. Nicky curses and jumps back, dropping the remote in favor of his wand. After a moment, the TV goes dark again and still seems to work when Ty switches it on. "Okay, no computers for you," he says, and Nicky slowly lowers his wand before looking very sheepish. "I'm sorry," he says. But Ty just smiles and waves a hand. "You should have seen what Niall put our electronics through when she was younger," he says, and Niall rolls her eyes. "She still owes me an iPod." When Niall checks in on her mother, she finds Anyippi chatting away to Andy and Joe as she continues prepping dinner. Joe is doggedly trying to help by manually peeling potatoes. She can tell he's itching for his wand, but they'd promised to full muggle it, and they're nothing if not stubborn. Seeing Andy interacting with Anyippi is a truly surreal experience. Two women who could not be more different, and yet somehow very similar. There's a quiet deference on Andy's face that strikes Niall between her ribs, a respect that's also tender enough to temper Andy's usual hard edge. Anyippi looks over and smiles at Niall, who walks over and hugs her, brief but tight. She has a lot of hugs to catch up on. "Niall, didn't you say we were expecting one more?" Anyippi says, and Niall glances at Andy before saying, "Yes, but I think he's running late." She pulls out her cast comm. No messages since they'd left England. "We've got enough for 7, right?" "Of course, baby," Anyippi says, sounding offended, and Niall laughs. But she keeps checking her cast comm as the afternoon turns into evening. She can't help but smile, though. Her mother's golden oldies playlist serenades them as they take turns helping Anyippi, who keeps offering them all snacks and then telling Ty off for ruining his appetite. They're setting the table when the intercom buzzes. Niall throws up her hands, but she's by the device in an instant. "What time do you call this?" she says, and they hear Booker's laugh sheepish over the speakers. "I'm sorry," he says. "Turns out cross-continental port keys are hard to get around Thanksgiving." When he steps through the door a minute later, they all stare. He looks good, albeit a little flustered. His hair and beard are neatly groomed, and underneath his winter coat, he's in a fitted blue dress shirt and pants that don't ruck around the ankles. He's carrying a bottle of sparkling grape juice in one hand and a beautiful bouquet of flowers in the other. "Mom," Niall says after hugging him, "this is Booker. Booker, my mom, Anyippi, and my brother Ty." Booker presents Anyippi with the flowers after shaking Ty's hand, and Anyippi dimples before looking uncertain. "I don't think we have a vase big enough," she says, and Booker says, "Would you mind if I drew up a vase?" Anyippi shakes her head, and Booker pulls out his wand in a way wizards usually don't, slowly and always in plain sight. He conjures an off-white ceramic to match the decor and places it on the side table, filling it with water before arranging the bouquet. Anyippi's eyes go wide, but she smiles when Booker turns back to her. "Thank you," she says, then claps her hands together. "You're just in time for dinner." Their dining table is actually too small. Booker looks uncertain as he realizes this, and then pained when Joe conjures up a chair for him that's comedically too small. "What?" Joe says innocently as Nikki and Andy snort. "Nothing else will fit." "Thanks, Joe," Booker says dryly, and squishes into the chair, squeezing between Niall and Nikki. There's barely enough room left to eat on when all the dishes are brought over. Anyippi's hovering on her feet until Niall gently sits her down. They say grace, which everyone else gamely holds hands and closes their eyes for, before dinner officially commences. Niall and Ty immediately battle over the mac and cheese, and she can see Nikki nudging Joe as he enthusiastically piles every option onto his plate. "Now," Anyippi says, and everyone looks at her, mouths bulging. "Because my children could never wait to eat, we can go around the table now and say what we're all thankful for, if everyone's comfortable with that." Niall realizes the only person she hasn't warned about this is Booker, who looks surprised but nods along with everyone else. Ty starts. He's thankful for new computer parts and Niall not making him run during Thanksgiving. Andy's next to him, and she says, "I'm thankful to be here, with new friends, current and old," with more sincerity than Niall expects. Joe opens his mouth, and both Andy and Booker say in unison, "Keep it short, Yusuf," which cracks everyone up. "All right, Killjoys," Joe says, mock offended. "I'm grateful for," he begins, and then looks at Nikki like it's a reflex. Niall can tell they're holding hands under the table. "I'm grateful for love," he says, and his face is too earnest to mock, "in all its forms. even when they ruin the entire speech I practice for this. Nikki says, I'm thankful for whatever brought us all together. I feel very lucky. Booker is next, and Niall feels him tense as everyone looks at him. He clears his throat and says, I'm thankful to be here. It's brief, but Niall feels every word against her heart, and she squeezes Booker's hand as Nikki squeezes his other. Her turn next. I'm thankful I've got you all as my team, she says, and they all smile at her, fierce and bright. Anyabi's looking quite misty-eyed as she says, Well, I'm also thankful that Niall has you all. She takes Niall's hand, and their calluses match. It's hard not knowing what she's up to, when it all sounds so dangerous. She smiles around the table. But meeting all of you makes me feel a lot better. Niall's always telling me how much she loves you all. Mom, Niall says, tipping her head back in horror, and everyone laughs. So thank you, and may you all continue to take care of each other, and you're all welcome back any time. They all sound their enthusiasm and dig back in. Anyippy looks increasingly satisfied as she realizes how much Quidditch players can eat, and quietly pleased as the team heap compliments on her. Ty asks the team for stories about Niall and listens attentively to each one. At first, Niall thinks he's looking for embarrassing material, but as she watches his face, she realizes he's asking so he can fill in the blanks of her life, hoarding the wider details she can't give as a first-person participant. A pattern forms. Joe narrating, Nikki correcting, Andy commentating, and Booker quietly adding explanations for Anyippy and Ty when the others speak too quickly and forget what muggles wouldn't know. Booker does it with a tact that speaks of well-worn practice, and she's fiercely grateful as Ty laughs, egging Joe on. Booker's still a little hunched next to her, but he's smiling, and he's here. They're all here, miraculously, all the people she loves crammed into her favorite place. She finds her mother giving her a knowing smile and has to try very hard not to tear up. They take a much-needed intermission between dinner and dessert. Ty convinces Joe that a walk will resuscitate their appetite, and Andy tags along, apparently impervious to the cold. Nikki escapes to the kitchen with Anyippy. Niall looks at Booker and says, Let me show you something. Booker smiles when she opens the door to her old room. Cute, he says, nodding at the battered little dollhouse that still sat on her shelf. Yeah, Niall says, walking over to her desk. I was adamant it was just as cool as the wizarding dollhouses. Didn't want Mom paying for something so overpriced anyway. Smart kid, Booker says. He sits on the edge of her bed, hands on his knees. I'm sorry I was late, he says, looking down at her carpet. That was rude of me. Couldn't decide? Niall asks, and Booker raises one shoulder. Unsure how I'd feel, he says. Being around... I'm working on it, but that's no excuse. I'm sorry. You came in the end, Niall says. That's what matters. Good thing you did, though. She leans down and pulls out the package that's hiding under her desk, or I would have carried this monster for nothing. She dumps it in Booker's lap before he can protest. His eyebrows rise as he struggles to balance it. What? He asks, and Niall gestures for him to unwrap it. Is this a Thanksgiving thing? He asks, picking at the tape until Niall reaches out and just rips the paper for him. It can be, she says. And Booker's about to ask another question when he realizes what he's holding. It's a huge, leather-bound book, pages so thick and full it had to be clipped shut. Sebastian Lelivre is embossed in gold across the front, and Booker runs his fingers over it, face creasing. You didn't do the usual retirement stuff, Niall says quietly, so we thought we'd improvise something. Why is it so? Booker asks, hand wrapping around the spine. He looks up at her, words lost. People had a lot to say, she says. Can you guess who helped me categorize everything? Nikki, Booker says, laughing as he runs his fingers down the cascading tabs. Yep, Niall says. By player, crew, front office, and public, and then alphabetized by surname, she says. Booker opens the cover and starts flicking through the pages, each one filled to the brim. Niall had adored scrapbooking again. Maybe she'd gone a little overboard. Booker's face softens with every page, fingers running over the messages and photos and bits of memorabilia. When he blinks, tears drop onto the pages, and he curses before he realizes they're waterproof. You really thought of everything, he says, as Niall hands him her tissue box. It was a team effort, she says, and he smiles at that. I don't know how you managed to get a hold of everyone, he says. Some of these people I must have met right at the beginning. Niall makes a face. Well, she says, Joe and Andy were super helpful, obviously, but I also asked Copley. He knows everybody. Booker's eyebrows raise, and then he snorts. Copley, he says. He tried to help me, he really did. He laughs at Niall's expression. It didn't turn out well, but his intentions were good. Whatever, Niall says, it was the least he could do. Booker's still smiling when he turns the next page and freezes. He makes a noise, like he's been wounded, and Niall's next to him in an instant. Booker, she says, touching his shoulder before looking down at the page. She'd tried not to read the messages that had come in, and Nikki had done a fair amount of the collation, too. She realizes she's looking down at Nikki's own page, filled with his horrible handwriting. There's a photo pasted in, glossy against the paper. It's a Muggle Polaroid, all the figures still and smiling. Niall recognizes teenaged Nikki, awkward and still filling out, complete with awful facial hair. There's a young child clambering up his left leg, and another one on his back, making devil horns above Nikki's head. A woman stands next to them, dark hair shining, cradling a baby in her arms as she beams at the camera. A man has his arms around her, not looking at the camera, but smiling at them all instead, wide and warm. It's Booker. Of course it is. But Niall has to stop and stare at this version of him caught in time. She's seen old photos of Booker before, but this one is different. He's so young. He's so happy. For a moment, he reminds her of Joe, the same unfiltered smile, the sheer unadulterated love in his face. There's an unfamiliar scrawl in the Polaroid's frame. Dearest Niccolo, it reads, we're going to miss you so much. Please visit often, even if I still can't make pasta you approve of. Thank you for all your help with the boys. Much tougher than Quidditch, I'll bet. Lots of love, Corinne. Oh, Niall says, and her own eyes sting a little. Booker's fingers hover just above the photo, like he's too scared to touch it. Must have been a riot billeting Nikki, Niall says, and Booker lets out an exhale that might have been a laugh. He was a moody little shit, Booker says, but Corinne loved him. His throat moves as he swallows, not looking up. He fell for every prank Matthew and Luke played on him, and he was there when Jean-Pierre was born. He shifts his legs, nearly dislodging the book. Niall steadies it with one hand and says hesitantly, "Do you mind?" Booker shakes his head and angles the page towards her. Her eyes are drawn to Nikki's note under the photo. "Booker," it says, "I'm sorry if this memory hurts you. But I wanted to remind you are still the man in that photo. You are still the man who loved infinitely, and who we all loved just as much. Corinne would always say you loved everyone else so much, you forgot about yourself. I still miss her, Booker, so I can't imagine how you must feel. But you are still the man she loved, only wiser. Anyone you've ever cared for will tell you that." Thank you, Niall, Booker says. And he's smiling at her when she looks up, unsteady but sincere. Thank you for this. It must have been a lot of work. It was fun, Niall says, smiling back. And honestly, the response was overwhelming. All we had to do was ask. She squeezes his shoulder, trying to make sure her point gets through. You've done so much, Booker. The proof is right here. That's what this is. Booker makes a face, and she gives him a severe look until he laughs. Let me go through it, he says, which is concession enough for now. She nods, standing up. Well, she says, I'm getting dessert. You in? All right, Booker says, carefully shutting the book. He's still looking at the cover when he says quietly, Thank you for inviting me tonight. Of course, Booker, Niall says. Family is always welcome here.